You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Hello, comrades. This is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and it's great to be here. We're here together in the middle of the week, so you make it down through Wednesday, and you're on your way to the weekend. So, you know, let's go ahead and start dissecting what's been going on today, and to help me do it is my good friend, Mr. Sven Longshanks. Sven, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm pretty good, Matt. I can't really say the same for the state of my country at the moment. It seems to go from bad to worse. It was only yesterday we heard that Amber Rudd, our Home Secretary, she can't pronounce the word R, she wants to lock people up for 15 years for viewing far-right content, which basically means looking at UKIP speeches, David Duke videos, and she thinks this is practical and logistical, and she can just lock people up for 15 years. It's like when she thought that she was going to be able to get a backdoor encryption into WhatsApp, and all these internet companies would be quite happy to give the British government the keys to it, basically, which they can't do because that's not the way encryption works. But she basically showed her complete ignorance at that time. And she's showing her complete ignorance now in thinking that she can lock people up for watching videos. I mean, it doesn't affect me. I just listen to podcasts, you know. But
it hits, I think, on such an important thing that, you know, for instance, with our comrades from National Action, which, of course, again, never a membership organization. So you can't ever been a member. But, you know, being accused of having terrorist material. Is it guns? Is it bombs? Is it knives? No, it's a sticker.
Yeah, I mean, that's it.
That's how they're redefining things in Britain.
That's it. That's completely it. Stickers, that's terrorist material. Support for terrorism, that's sending a tweet criticizing the government. Being a member of the group has got no membership at all, I guess. Anyone that just showed support for them when they were around, I guess the government would try and say that they're members. But today we've got the Tory party conference, and it was all a big lead up to Theresa May's big speech today. And she practically collapsed on the stage. She lost her voice. She couldn't speak. She was just whispering by the end of it. She just looked so weak and pathetic. Someone actually managed to break into the conference and climbed up on the stage and gave her a marching orders, gave her a P-45, which is basically you get that when you've been given the sack from your job in Britain. It's your final tax thing. Yeah, I really couldn't believe it. Well, I can believe it. I mean, she should never be there in the first place. She's only there by default. And yet she's got so much arrogance. She called an election thinking that people were going to support her. They don't. Nobody wants her. You know, 17 million people in this country voted for nationalism. That's what the vote for Brexit was. It was a vote for nationalism. And what has she done since she got in there? She has done her very best to silence nationalism, silence all the critics of Islam. I mean, she's gone after a Scottish Dawn and National Action, but she'll soon be going after UKIP, and she'll be going after Tommy Robinson, Anne-Marie Waters, Liberty GB, Britain First. They're already talking about going after Britain First. They just want to silence all political dissent, and they don't care how they do it. They'll twist the law, and as you were saying earlier, and they'll claim that things like putting stickers up are terrorist offences because the stickers might look something like the National Action ones, and National Action are designated terrorists, therefore that is a terrorist act putting these stickers up. But the general public doesn't know that. The general public thinks that a terrorist act is preparing weapons, preparing bombs. And the way they've dealt with that, again, is absolutely mind-boggling. You know, they're banning cleaning products. They're banning cleaning products. That's how they're going to stop people throwing acid in people's faces.
And also, you can't order knives. Sven, isn't it true in the UK you can't order knives through the mail or something like that still?
Yeah.
Because this huge anti-knife campaign to try and stop African refugees from, I guess, stabbing other people.
Yeah, well, this is just it. I mean, all these stabbings go on in London. They go on in the cities, the inner city areas that are filled with non-whites, filled with blacks, filled with Pakistanis. They love stabbing each other up. It's a pastime they get involved in around about the age of 13 or 14. I bet there isn't a school in London that hasn't had a stabbing victim. So they say they're going to lock people up for 4 years for stabbing, so, or holding a knife. So what all that does is it means that law-abiding people can't carry knives. A knife is a tool. That's what it is. It's a tool. It's the same as a screwdriver or anything else. And you can use any tool you like as a weapon, but they've decided to pick on knives. So these Negroes and Pakis, now what they do is they buy this acid and they throw that in people's faces. So now they're banning cleaning products. So people aren't going to be able to do the cleaning that they need to do. And they've also almost thought about banning the hiring of removal vans, because these Muslims have been hiring vans and then running people over. Well, what they've done is they've tightened everything up on that. So you have to produce all these different documents, criminal record, background checks, all of this before you can even hire a van. So they became very, very close to actually banning all hiring of vans.
Well, I mean, this is what we're dealing with in the United States, you know, constantly. I mean, Chicago alone has close to 1,000 murders a year. Same in every major American city, whether it's Atlanta, whether it's Baltimore, whether it's Los Angeles, whether it's Houston. I mean, this is the sort of thing. And, you know, they always talk about gun control. Well, we need more gun control. We need to get rid of all the guns. That will stop violence. And no, we have a racial problem. You know, as Tony and I were talking about on the show yesterday, you know, the black male population, 6% of the American population, commits like 52% of the murders and a huge amount of the rapes and things like that. You know, guns are not the problem. If you know, in Britain that you guys got rid of the guns, okay, well, then they went to knives. All right, now they're going to cleaning products, throw acid in people's faces. Then they'll go to broken bottles. I mean, this is or a brick. I mean, you know, or a stick or a club. I mean, if you want to commit crime and violence, especially considering if the rest of the population that follows the law, you know, is disarmed, that's a very important thing. That if you know, even if you've got a very primitive weapon, if everyone else has been totally disarmed, who's going to follow the laws, can't defend themselves. Well, what that means then is even a primitive weapon is more effective than anything your prey is going to have. And it allows these criminals to prey on people. I mean, you look at areas that have high amount of gun ownership where people carry guns all the time. I mean, where I live, I see people with guns on their hip every single day. And that makes me feel safer. You know, I carry my gun every day. I've got a concealed carry permit. That's what every single free man should do. This goes back to Anglo-Saxon common law. The idea that a man has a right to defend his home, defend his family, and to defend his community against crazy people. You know, the church shooting that happened with this refugee that came in and started shooting everyone, it was stopped by a guy who had a gun. But they want to disarm us. They want to make us totally reliant upon the state. And, you know, with that, it goes, you look and see the rise of the feminist movement. Well, how have they destroyed the family? Well, they've made women totally dependent on the state. Instead of having the man be the provider and the protector, then they get all their government programs. They don't need a husband anymore. That breaks apart that fabric, you know, in communities where we could defend ourselves, defend our communities against threats. Well, no, we can't defend ourselves anymore. We have to rely on the state to protect us. It makes us dependent upon the abuser. That's the one that's displacing our people, that's sending our jobs overseas, that's bringing in these foreigners in the first place, that's sending our sons off to die in foreign conquests and wars. I mean, this is what they do. They try and make us totally dependent on them in order to better control us. And it's sad to see what's happening in the UK. I mean, here in the United States, you know, we're part of the Anglosphere and our laws are based off of English common law. That's where all of our founders, they declare themselves as free Englishmen. And we get our traditions from. So if they could be banning guns and even banning the putting up of stickers in the UK now, and they're doing the same thing in places like Canada, where you can't speak out against transgenders and other freak shows, and you know they've taken away most of their guns, then that can happen here. And this is where, you know, kind of all of us are facing the same enemy on the same barricades, and their mission is to totally disarm us, make us totally dependent on them as they displace us.
Yeah, it's not the guns that are the problem. It's not the knives that are the problem or the cleaning fluid. It's the people. It's the people that are using them. I think that's really quite clear. When you look at the American states that are majority white, they don't have a shooting problem. It's places like Chicago and Detroit, places that are full of Negroes that end up having problems with lots of people getting shot by guns. That is clearly not the problem. But the government, the British government, will not face up to that. I mean, just last week, they started releasing these results from a huge survey that they've done on equality in Britain, basically. And they're looking at the disparate life outcomes between whites and blacks. One of them, for instance, is two out of three white people own their own home, but it's only two out of five blacks own their own home. Twice as many white people are employed as blacks. 80% of Muslims are unemployed. Two or three times as many blacks as there actually are their percentage in the population are in prison at the moment. And all these results, they all bear out everything that we say about blacks being a different race entirely to whites. They have a different racial character. They are more prone to act without thinking. They're more prone to crime. Of course, we also know about the lower than average IQ. These are the reasons why blacks behave like that. And these are the reasons why they're likely to use knives and throw acid in people's faces. But the British government says, oh no, this is all because the white man is racist. The white man is just deliberately not employing these blacks. It's not because they're criminals, they've got a criminal record. It's just because of the color of their skin. And more people here in Britain are waking up to this. But it seems that when they do, the government just wants to silence them. This is what they mean by far-right propaganda, is basically uncomfortable facts which highlight the differences between the races. And they just want to silence that. And they won't. We won't let them.
Well, exactly. And I mean, the thing is that everything within the Western society is totally inorganic. You know, what works for the black community and how they organize themselves, they don't need to abide by Western standards and, you know, in terms of like how we organize, how our law works and stuff like that. They develop their own systems. I mean, you're trying to fit foreign peoples into a foreign way of doing things. I mean, this is why, for instance, Iraq. I mean, look, ever since, you know, 2003, Saddam Hussein is toppled in the advance of the project of Greater Israel. And then what happens? We say, oh, well, all these Iraqis, they need American democracy. They need, you know, an American style constitution. They need to have this sort of representative government. And it doesn't work. It doesn't. It fundamentally doesn't work. And it's not because like Iraqis, they were able to run a very powerful state. They had the fourth largest military in the world. They were able to, you know, increase under Saddam Hussein and the Ba'athist Party. They're able to dramatically increase different technologies, oil technologies. They were able to build a relatively fair society. Colonel Gaddafi, for instance, in Libya, you know, you look at Northern Africa and you see that when Western imperialism comes in, it ends up tearing everything apart. But Gaddafi had it that you had basically cheap, almost free gasoline, medical care, high standard of living. And, you know, now Gaddafi has been toppled. And we're trying to put in another American system, and it doesn't work because different peoples organize in different ways. They have different types of societies because we're not citizens of the world. We're citizens of our nation. And the idea that we can take all of these foreign peoples and put them here in the United States and or Britain, for that matter, or France or Germany, when they're not German or French or British or American, fundamentally shows a lack of understanding or a purposeful desire for there to be multicultural conflict, because these other groups need to be ruled by their own people in their own nations under their own systems. And it might not be the way that we do things. And that's fine. It doesn't have to be that way. I care about how our nations are run. But the thing is, with multiculturalism, we then have to adjust ourselves to try and, you know, make this increasingly fragmented multicultural empire function. And it doesn't. It fundamentally can't. Multiculturalism doesn't work. It leads to tension. You know, we're just seeing this. I mean, in Iraq right now, you know, the push for the Kurds to have an independent Kurdistan, and, you know, they don't feel like they're represented by the rest of Iraq. And I've got plenty of critiques of the Kurds for a variety of reasons. But, you know, you see this push, this idea of how, you know, Arabs and stuff organize. You need to have a strong man running the nation. I mean, that goes for really anyone, but especially in their culture where they've got that tribal leadership and stuff like that, where things are very family and clan oriented with your own tribe. If you're going to have a nation of different peoples, well, then you need to have, you know, different tribes. You need to have an extremely strong leader at the head to keep everything under control. But that's not how it works. And that's why destabilizing all the, you know, the Middle East, and then everything's, you know, falls apart when we try and impose a foreign system on them. And then we say, oh, it's horrible. Why didn't you come to our countries? And then they're bringing a foreign system here. I mean, I was reading not too long ago in France about another like huge riot that broke out in a refugee camp where you had all these different, ethnic groups that were like brawling with each other in refugee camps because of tribal differences and stuff like that. You know, multiculturalism fundamentally does not work. Doesn't matter what laws you pass. Doesn't matter what studies you do. Doesn't matter who you're trying to lift up to make stuff happen. Multiculturalism is an abysmal failure socially, economically, politically. Doesn't work. The only people it benefits is the Jew oligarchs. And you know, one thing I think you're not going to be surprised by this at all, Sven. But I was reading just this morning about the Center for Community Change, which is one of the real big Donald, you know, anti-Trump resistance groups, and their taxes came out. And guess who all their donors are? Their largest donors, $3 million from the W.K. Kellogg Foundation. Of course, when you go buy your cereal, you know, that's the Kellogg family. The Ford Foundation, you know, Henry Ford, a man that supported Adolf Hitler, a man that, you know, wrote about the international Jew constantly, that actually improved the lives of his workers. And, you know, it was one of really the hallmarks of American industry. $2.3 million. The Open Society Foundation, George Soros, close to $2 million. And, you know, it goes on and on, all the groups you would imagine, that these grassroots so-called resistance groups are being bankrolled by the billionaires. And this is something that happens, I know, in the UK as well, where your labor unions and Hope Not Hate and all these different groups, they say that they're, you know, fighting for multiculturalism and for integration and all these sorts of things, but they're being bankrolled by the billionaires. This entire strategy of the West is capital working with corrupt governments and, of course, the Zionist Jewish influence to destabilize the entire world. And this is where they get their money from. I mean, the proof is in the pudding, as they say.
Yeah, I think they really did a number on the Henry Ford Institute. I mean, he really was a great man. But then once he died, they just took it over and used it for communist means, the same as George Soros and the rest of them. I think you hit the nail on the head there when you're talking about these different peoples. I mean, they've all evolved a different culture, and we can't say whether they're right or wrong, but we seem to feel that we have the right to do that. We seem to feel we have the right to export democracy to Iraq and to Libya. Never mind the fact that every time we try and do that, it just destroys the place. And I think this plays into it as well, because then when we get the immigration problem, a lot of our people say, oh, yes, but we caused lots of troubles over there in their countries. We have to put up with the refugees because we've gone into Syria and destabilized it. And we've gone into Libya and we've destabilized it. So our people tend to, you know, to feel a certain amount of guilt. And that gets played upon by the media. And of course, the media hushes up the crimes which take place against our people. So what we really need to do is say to our people, look, you know, it may look as if it was us that went into Syria and went into Libya, but our governments were basically working for these banks and for these foreign interests, the majority of whom are Jewish. The people that you just listed, the George Soros Institute and for wars for greater Israel. I mean, they're the ones that are really behind the war in Syria. I mean, nobody I speak to understands why we're causing all these problems in Syria. They don't understand what Bashar al-Assad supposedly did because he didn't do anything. It was just Israel that wanted that land and that wanted to get rid of him because he was opposed to Israel. So most of our people don't realize these things that are going on behind the scenes, and they can see that something is wrong, and they look for an alternative. And of course, then you've got the sponsored alternative, the left wing alternative, the one that's funded by these companies. And they see groups like Hope Not Hate that are supposedly standing against hate. Of course, nobody likes hate. Nobody wants to have anything to do with hatred. People forget that hate is the other side to love. You know, if somebody is hurting something you love, then you hate whoever it is that is hurting them. And our people are being hurt by these hordes that are coming into our country. We've got people that have been disfigured by acid. We've got people whose family members are in hospital. They've been maimed or can't use their legs, or even worse, they're dead. We've got thousands of girls that have been raped by these Muslims. And all this sort of activity, these actions are fine in their own countries. In Africa, if you offend somebody's honor, then yes, they will come at you with a knife or a club and they will batter you to death. That's just the African culture. That's the way they've done things for thousands of years. If you're in a Muslim country and it's a woman that's out on their own, then they're fair game for the Muslims. That's their culture. They have a culture like that to keep their women in order. They have to either get married, or if they don't get married, they're going to run the risk of being raped. So they have to dress up in a bag. That's their culture. We can't say that that's wrong, because that's the way they developed in order to keep their society together and in order to deal with basically the human condition. That's the way they developed it. I mean, we developed here in the West. We controlled our men. We got our men to control their emotions. So we didn't just jump on every woman that we see, a scantily clad woman, jump on her, because we can control our emotions. We're capable of doing that. But the Arabs and the Muslims, they didn't develop that. So they said, well, we're going to do the other thing. We'll have to get our women to dress up so that to prevent the men from getting aroused in the first place. It's just two different ways of dealing with it. But when you put the two together in one territory, it's just a recipe for disaster, which is what we're seeing now. And the only way to deal with it is for one culture to reign supreme. This is the problem. We're being told that multiculturalism is going to work. All we need to do is be nicer to the immigrants and make it illegal for us to criticize them. But it will just keep going until one culture consumes the other. That's the way that it works. You cannot have two cultures in the same territory. One of them has to exterminate the other, and then it will all become one culture again. And the problem with giving in to all their demands like we are now is that we are the ones that are going to lose out in this. This whole idea of their being able to mix all these different peoples together, it just doesn't work. There's nowhere in the world that it has ever worked. It's always just a recipe for war. And this is what we're seeing now. I mean, even the Bible says a house divided against itself will not stand. And yet our politicians tell us that this diversity, a house divided against itself, is a strength. It's not a strength. It's a weakness. It's destroying us. And we have to take a stand against it. Whether these politicians are going to ban us from watching videos or not, they're not going to be able to put the amount of people that, what, 17 million people there are that supported Brexit. They're not going to be able to put 17 million people in prison for watching UKIP speeches. You know, this is just grandstanding by these female politicians as well. I'm sorry to say, we've got the country is full of female politicians at the moment, female judges, prime minister who's a woman, the prime minister of Scotland's a woman, the prime minister of Ireland. And this is what they're doing, basically. They're pushing this feminine, emotional-driven agenda where they just want to silence all the criticism and appear as if they're a humanitarian superpower that just welcomes diversity regardless of all the crimes. You know, they're looking to Sweden, which is another country that wants to do this. They want the whole world to say, look at Sweden, look how wonderfully welcoming they are, look how much they praise diversity, Canada gives awards for diversity. And it's all a pack of lies. It's just harming our people, and we have to put a stop to it.
Well, exactly. I mean, we need to just go back to what works and what works for us. You can't fit a square peg in a round hole, as the saying goes, and that's the situation we're facing in the West now. You know, we're at the last third of the show. It's amazing how time flies and we're talking about such important things. But I wanted to identify over the past few months, you know, one of the things I think is really interesting in identifying activism going forward. If you look at Britain, you know, look in the UK, the north of England, of course, is what pushed Brexit over. It was the white working class people there. And, you know, I just wanted to compare real quick Charlottesville and Pikeville. You know, we had a very successful event in Pikeville, Kentucky, where the left actually abandoned Black Bloc for the first time I've ever seen, because they realized that their antics would be alienating to normal people. They told them that they shouldn't try and shame the locals if they didn't agree with them on immigration or homosexuality and stuff like that, because you know, they wanted to try and win the workers on their side. And they got like maybe 10 people from the town. We got more people from the local community actually come and join up with us. And, you know, compare that with Charlottesville, of course, stunning success on an entirely, you know, different metrics, of course. But you look, doing an event where the local mayor, Jew, assistant mayor, Black Panther, you know, the very, very liberal town, and how they treated us versus Pikeville. I think our big focus, not that we should ever, you know, stay away from major cities or where the liberals are, but, you know, we really can build this grassroots political organizing in the areas where people are tired of immigration. They are tired of political correctness. They're tired of an economy that's screwing them over left and right. And, you know, I think a model of like Pikeville shows us where our movement needs to be going forward, because it's something that the left really is on the back foot. They can't bring all their nonsense. They can't bring their mobs out. They can't riot, because your average, you know, Pike County resident isn't going to put up with that nonsense. Whether he agrees with us or not, he's not going to put up with a bunch of champagne socialist leftist college students trying to burn his town down. He'd shoot him himself. Like, you know, the police, you know, actually gathered in prayer before they went out to hold an event. Far different than what we saw in Charlottesville. And the Pikeville Police Department, far less funded than Charlottesville for obvious reasons. And they did a far superior job of actually upholding our constitutional rights to hold an event. They stood in between both sides. And when they saw, you know, by the end of the event, almost all of the cops in the middle of the street were facing the anti-fascists because they know they were the violent ones. We were there to talk about economic policies, social policies, political policies, and how we can better the lives of the community. And you know, compare that to the pigs of the Charlottesville Police Department that wanted nothing more than to let a riot break out in the streets to advance a Jewish political agenda. You know, I really think that our strength lies amongst our people that are already awakened, or, you know, amongst the workers that are racially and somewhat class conscious. I think that's where we have a lot of strength. Now, in the last couple of minutes, Sven, I wanted to kind of get your opinion in terms of organizing the UK, where you have the rural areas and then the white working class urban folks being a target demographic versus you know, just going to where all the leftists hang out, because then we're not talking to anybody, but our message can actually spread, and it puts the left on a back foot when we go to areas where people actually can listen to us and, you know, like our message.
Well, yeah, I was discussing this earlier in the week with Subal, or Brutus of Troy, he calls himself. And we were saying, you know, at Pikeville, you had it was a mainly white working class area. And so you were bound to have support there. And yet when you were at Charlottesville, that was deliberately provocative. It was an extremely liberal area. They'd said that they were going to take a stand against Trump, and it's full of lefties. So it you can contrast the two. And in one of them, you were welcomed, and the Antifa just left, and the police did a good job. And in the other one, you had the police against you, and you had the Antifa against you, and the media was all attacking you as well. And I think in Britain, going to these areas that are 99% white, that's the areas we need to go to. That's the areas where we need to be waking people up. But the problem that you have then is they may not have seen the diversity. But then again, you probably have also got people that have moved there because they've seen what's happening to the areas that they were living in that got flooded with the hordes. It's just getting them to admit that the reason why they moved to the north or moved to a more rural area is so that they could get away from the diversity, because they'll say, oh, there's less crime, or there's better schools for the kids. But what it all really boils down to is the fact that it was white flight, and they were fleeing from the diversity. And I think these northern areas, I mean, in Britain, it is in the north. It is quite a stronghold for nationalism, but so are these rural areas as well. I mean, the latest group that they've banned, Scottish Dawn, I mean, you don't get further north than that, and that's quite away from the city centre of London, and yet they must have had considerable support to have come to the attention of the government. And if we can radicalise these white areas, then there's no way that Amber Rudd is going to be able to put them all in prison for watching videos or people discussing what's happening to their country. How can they put patriots in prison for discussing the ruin of their country? Sooner or later, there's just going to be too many of us. You know, we must number 17 million people voted for Brexit. You can't say that's all far right. Most of that's civic nationalists. But there must be 100,000, you know, people that sympathise with our views, at least in Britain. And they're not going to be able to get all of them. We just need to radicalise them and get them moving. I'm very disappointed with myself that I didn't highlight that Anne-Marie Walters was standing for UKIP more. Because just out of our listeners at Radio Arian, we could have got her voted in. She only lost by under 1,000 people. So we need to concentrate on what's going on around us and maybe not take such an ideological stance with the people that we support either, because we had disagreements with her on certain issues. So a lot of people in the British alt-right were running her down. And the fact is, if she had won, we would have had a counter-jihad party in Britain, which is a stepping stone to the full truth. It's just that's just the first stage to getting to the truth. and we would have known where our target audience were. They were going to all the UKIP rallies and the UKIP meetings. So we could have joined and we could have networked and we could have helped to radicalize people. And that's a chance that we lost. And that's basically from being too ideologically pure with the people that we support. And I'm not saying we should compromise on our principles at all. I'm just saying that when people have a lot of support and they're in the media eye, we should support them because they do help to bring people to our cause. So there's a couple of ways that we can improve what we're doing there. I think, Matt, as you say, go to the white working class areas and also pay attention to who is further to the right in the mainstream media. We've also got Katie Hopkins, who I think is doing a really great job and is continually moving to the right. And I'm sure you must have people over there in America similar too.
Well, you know, our big mission over the next several years is developing our community infrastructure. We're doing a clothing drive right now for Eastern Kentucky that we're going to do. We're gathering supplies to distribute in hard hit communities in Eastern Kentucky. We're looking towards getting some of our members who are doctors and nurses to be able to see about opening free medical clinics and things like that to really just help our people. It's based on providing real community service, showing that when the Jewish system has abandoned the people, then we can be there to fill that gap for them, and then being able to work with politics on the ground, the issues on the ground, to mobilize our people. So we've got a very exciting future in the UK and the rest of Europe here in the United States, helping our people, putting them first, and showing them that we're on their side while the system has abandoned them. So we'll keep on. Now, Sven, thank you so much for being here. Try not to get arrested for reading an article from Breitbart.com with your tyrannical Orwellian government. And thank you again for everything that you do. And thank you to my listeners. I'm going to look forward to being back tomorrow, same time, same place. Thank you guys for listening today, and hail victory.
Listening to The Daily Traditionalist on Radio Area.